Welcome to the Jack Hopkins Show podcast, where stories about the power of focus and resilience are revealed by the people who live those stories. And now, the host of the Jack Hopkins Show podcast, Jack Hopkins.
All right, and welcome to the Jack Hopkins Show podcast. I'm your host, Jack Hopkins. Today's guest is Soviet-born American businessman and former associate of none other than Rudy Giuliani, Mr. Lev Parnas. Now, as you might recall, unless you were hibernating in a cave somewhere, Lev Parnas, Rudy Giuliani, and a handful of others were involved in creating the false Biden-Ukraine conspiracy theory, which was part of the Trump-Ukraine scandal effort to damage Joe Biden. Now, it might not surprise you to learn that as president, Donald Trump said he knew nothing about what Lev Parnas was involved in. And Lev Parnas has insisted that Donald Trump, then President Donald Trump, knew exactly what was going on. In this episode, we're going to talk Donald Trump. We're going to talk Russian mob. We're going to talk some MAGA Republican names like Ron Johnson, Andy Biggs, Jim Banks, and others. And I asked Lev a question regarding why these people are so invested in continuing to support Donald Trump and push the whole pro-Russian thing. And I have to tell you, the answer that he gave me was nothing at all like the answer that I thought I might get from Lev. And it totally reorganized my thinking when it comes to people like Ron Johnson and why they continue to carry water for Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. I think you'll find that answer as interesting as I did. I have to tell you, when you get done listening to or watching this episode with Lev Parnas, you'll want to go out and get his book, Shadow Diplomacy, Lev Parnas and His Wild Ride from Brooklyn to Trump's Inner Circle. It's a fantastic book. And just like you are going to find Lev doing in this episode on this podcast, the book, too, will fill in so many holes and spin your head 180 degrees to where you're looking at some of the things that you've thought about for a long time now and been fairly certain that you knew how everything fit together. And then, boom, it smacks you right in the forehead. And you go, wow, I never even considered that piece fitting with that piece in the way that they do. Truly fascinating. So with that, without further ado, let's get right in to my conversation with Mr. Lev Parnas. Okay, Lev, we finally made this happen. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Jack.
Absolutely. You've been in the media a lot lately. You've become a figure who is really critically important in this upcoming election. I want to talk a little bit about how we got here and why you've become as important as you are in this election. Let's go back to pre-Donald Trump. Tell me a little bit about your connections and associations and how you came into Donald Trump's sphere, so to speak.
Sure, Jack. Absolutely. That's one of the reasons I wrote the book Shadow Diplomacy, is because when I got arrested, a lot of people had no idea who I was and, you know, assumed that I was this Russian spy or somebody that had no interest in America and was just trying to be a foreign asset. but that's not who I am. And before I go into that, I also want to make it very clear to your viewers that not only am I a critical person involved in the 2024 election, but I was a critical person involved in the 2020 election, but I was silenced by the DOJ, the Attorney General Bill Barr, and also Special Prosecutor Scott Brady. So, and the Republican senators that wouldn't allow witnesses in the first impeachment of Donald Trump. Because if that would have happened, like Jeremy Raskin said, if I was allowed to testify in the first impeachment, we wouldn't be here. There would be no January 6th. Donald Trump should have been impeached on the first impeachment, and we should have been rid of Donald Trump. Instead, here we are. Going back to your question, I mean, listen, I was born in Odessa, Ukraine. Back then, it was still the Soviet Union. We immigrated here as Jewish refugees. We came on our way, actually, in 1976. We were actually immigrating to Israel on our stopover, layover in Rome. My sister won. It was a 200-year bicentennial anniversary of the United States. So the Italian ambassador, the U.S. ambassador in Italy, gave out 200 green cards as a lottery. And 200 people got a chance to go to the United States right away with a green card. And we were one of those families. So we came to the United States. We settled into a little community called Little Odessa in Brighton Beach. It was in Brooklyn, New York. It was primarily, mostly all refugees from the former Soviet Union, primarily Ukrainian, Jewish, some Russian. We all spoke Russian at the time. And I grew up on the streets of Brooklyn, actually, idolizing guys like Donald Trump, like, you know, guys like John Gotti, mafia guys. My father passed away when I was 11 years old, and it was kind of, I took over as being the man of the family. You know, I had my sister, my grandmother, my older sister, my grandmother, my mother that I had to take care of. So by 13, I was already on the streets working and trying to make money. So that was me growing up, and eventually I was able to, you know, through, we have a long, not a long time to go through the whole story, but sure, through sure. a lot of endeavors. You know, I started very young from working with lots of different mafia figures to eventually going out and starting international trade in 1989-90 when the fall of the Soviet Union came down. I was there doing international trade to then going on to Wall Street and building a career of over 10 years on Wall Street. Being involved in some of the most, you know, craziest stories that, you know, we've saw movies about, the penny stocks, the mob on Wall Street. That was kind of my life until I, you know, eventually moved to Florida, settled down, had lots of kids. I have 7 kids and was trying to build a life until eventually running in the same circles. And I got that phone call from my son one day. He was 16 years old, and he was just getting involved in politics, because in our family, we've never voted. We were never involved in politics. That was very far for us. And he told me that, you know, hey, your friend Donald Trump is running for president. Now, he wasn't my friend at the time, but because we ran in the same circles, my son saw pictures of us on Instagram. So he assumed that we were friends. And, you know, just by association, it was close enough, you know, having somebody that you have a picture run for president. So I thought I'm going to make some, do something special for him too. And I got us some tickets, VIP tickets to his first rally in Doral. And we went there, and that was the first real interaction that I had with Donald Trump, where I was able to tell him about my story, where when I was 15, I was working for his father, Fred Trump. We spent about 10, 15 minutes talking, where he, you know, told my son that once he becomes a lawyer, he could work at the White House and stuff like that. And we took pictures, and it was one of those really my first bonding moment with him, where I really said to myself, wow, I mean, this is a real guy. He's just like you and me, and he's running for president. He'll make a difference. And that's when I really started getting involved and supporting, but mostly not money or anything. It was mostly being verbal in the community and, you know, starting supporting Trump in that sense. And then one day in 2000, and it was 16 in October, right when that whole whole video came out, audio of him saying grab the female by the Gentiles, and his ratings went down, I was approached by this billionaire, Robert Pereira. He was a Republican billionaire supporter, and he had this $130 million house in Boca Raton, and he wanted to host Trump for an event there and a dinner. And he asked me if I would participate? And I said, absolutely. You know, that was, you know, for me, not only was I excited to be around Trump again and be around that whole political aurora, but I also, you know, from a business standpoint, at that time I was working in a big real estate deal and I needed to be in the room with guys like Donald Trump and try to be able to make money. So we threw that event for him. It was about 20 people. That was it. And that included husbands and wives. So you'd probably say about eight couples. Trump arrived with Giuliani, Brian Ballard, and entourage of people. He was supposed to only stay for half an hour. But when we started having at dinner, when we had the round table, we started having our conversations. Me and Trump just hit it off like two guys on the street and started, because he was all depressed at the time, talking about how he could be playing golf instead of doing this, and you know, all the attacks he's getting, and he, all that, the same rhetoric he would always say, but at that time it was so genuine and we believed into it, and kind of me and him took over the conversation. So instead of staying for 20 minutes, he ended up there for like 45 to an hour and spent most of the time talking to me. After, as he was leaving, he told his staff to tell me that he invited me basically to be part of, for the next month, I was at every rally, at front row seats at the Hillary debate in Las Vegas, and then finally at the Hilton when he won. So that was my journey into Trump world, from basically a kid in Brooklyn to eventually being, you know, very close, among the top donors in the president of the United States. Right. That was before Ukraine or anything hit.
This is a question I've not seen you be asked before. How important or useful, I guess is a better way of saying this, how useful was a background and experience and an understanding of the mafia and the underworld when you enter into the world of Donald Trump and you are going to be working with or for him?
Oh, extremely important, because a lot of people, you know, make jokes about it, laugh about it. They, you know, laugh at Michael Cohen when he comes out and tries to say the same thing. But you have to understand, Donald Trump grew up, first of all, in an authoritarian family with his father, Fred Trump. And then he started going out into the business world in New York City in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. That era was mob controlled. It's all public information. This is nothing. I'm not opening some kind of secret here. Sure. These people controlled everything that had to do with unions, when it had to do with windows, to, you know, cement, aluminum, you name it. You couldn't build a building in New York City without dealing with the mob. And, you know, Donald Trump dealt with the mob not only in New York City, but in New Jersey and other places in the country, because most of his businesses had to do with entertainment, had to do with hospitality, and had to do with casinos, all of those that entailed the mob. So Donald Trump grew up with these people and understood and mortalized them, because he always wants to be. That's why he has the same infinity right now, mortalization, for guys like Putin and Xi and, you know, Kim Jong-un, because he respects power. He wants to be, you hear him talk, he wants to be the guy with the final say. He doesn't want to be, you know, if he says he wants you know, tanks rolling down you know, Washington, right, Avenue, he wants tanks, Pennsylvania Avenue, he wants tanks rolling down. He doesn't want nobody, he doesn't need Congress or anybody to come in there and say, no, you can't do that. And that's the type of, you know, mob mentality. And that's where you also learn to the way you speak. Trump doesn't speak to you, you know, that's why he doesn't use phones, really emails. He doesn't have that. Only now he started using Twitter and Truth Social, because that's his form of communicating to the public. But otherwise, Trump is that old school mafia guy that doesn't email, doesn't text, doesn't leave a form of, you know, communication. And when he talks to you, he doesn't tell you, hey, you know, I want you to go do this. You know, he'll say, oh my God, I really appreciate all you're doing for us. You know, keep up the good work. You know, similar to a guy walking into a restaurant and saying, hey, you know, you have a wonderful restaurant here. It would be a shame if it burned down tomorrow.
Right.
You know what I'm saying to you? These are the same antidote conversations. And that's what Trump is about. And that's why he ran the White House like a mob boss, not as a president. So, yes, you had to have. That's why people, if you take a look at all the people around him that are actually people that he worked with, he trusted, he sent on these missions, like myself, like Michael, like Cohen, we all had that mob background. You know, Michael Cohen had that mob background from his, you know, Uncle Morty Davis and growing up and also in New York and Brooklyn, and just like myself. So these are the type of people that he could relate to and speak to. And that's why he chose to deal with them instead of dealing with actual professional in his administration.
I've got, I don't know that this is so much a question as it is a statement. And then whether you can answer it yes, no, or just tell me how far off track I may or may not be. I have seen it be suggested before in articles and on certain videos that the timing at which Giuliani started clearing out the Italian mafia might have been for the purpose of maybe making some room for the Russian mob to settle in. Am I clear off base when I read that and think, you know, that might, there might be something to that?
No, I don't think that Giuliani had a role with the Russian mafia to clear out the Italian. I think, you know, certain things in life and history happen by, you know, even though I don't believe in coincidence, but coincidences happen to form history in the way that it does. I think it was a time where when Giuliani came in, it was an interesting time where the Italian mob was at a peak where you had, you know, the hierarchy and the media, and he went after them. I think the Russian mob, not I think, I know because I was around that, but they used that as their way, not only the Russian mob, but also the Chinese, the triads, the Japanese, the Dominican Republic, used that as, because there was no task force set up for Russian task force or, you know, Jamaican task force or Dominican task. It was primarily Italian task force. He had all kinds of, you know, or family organized different family task force until it took him some time until, I think, you know, and I write in my book, I think one of the first times when the Russian mob hit the radar was in the 80s during the tax gas scam, when they, you know, stole the tax off the gas, and they partnered up with the Italians. And one of the, you know, biggest guys involved in that, and he's vocal about that, is Michael Francesi.
Yes.
He has a podcast and talks about it. And, you know, me and Michael ran in the same circles and dealt with the same people. I was just very young at the time for my age. You know, when Michael was running, I was around 14, 15, 16 years old. But because people like my uncle and others in the industry were in that business, I was a runner. I did all kinds of odds and ends. So that's how I know all these people and know everything that happened. But that was, I think, when the Russian mafia hit, you know, because it was billions of dollars in the 80s of, you know, it was a really big hit. And I think that's when the task force started and all of that.
So if you are someone like Vladimir Putin, how long before anything that is on the map that we are examining now would Putin have been identifying Donald Trump as, this is a guy we are going to groom. This is a guy that will serve us in the future. How does that work, and at what point does that begin?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I think there's different tactics for different individuals that they try to, when you say groom, you know, there's people like Donald Trump don't need grooming. They are, you know, useful idiots. You know, these are people that, you know, even Putin and people in other countries like Kim Jong-un and others are, you know, scratch their head and say, I can't believe he does what he does. It plays right into their hand, because they don't have no love lost for him. They don't trust him. They understand he's, at the end of the day, he's still American. He's still anti whatever they believe in, even though he plays this rhetoric. So it's not like they have the love, but he plays off of it and puts them in these positions where they have to react back. And that's the mob boss mentality. That's the way, you know, mob bosses, you have to come in the room and look like the big guy, to be the one that sits at the top of the table. Even just watch when Trump used to walk in and want to be in the front, even pushing people aside, right, other, you know, presidents and dignitaries, just to, yes, be in the front. It's that mentality. Yeah. So I think, you know, when it comes to Trump and that world, I think it's, and I apologize, I just lost track of your question?
Is it fair to say then that he was selected simply?
Right, yeah.
He didn't have to be groomed.
Well, he didn't have to be, exactly. I mean, he selected himself because okay. So he wants to be, you know, friendly with Putin. He needs to be friendly because he understands. He's not stupid. Trump understands that if he goes out and tries to win fair and square, he could never win this election. The only way he has a chance of winning this election is if he has Russia and Putin interfere in the election. So that's why he makes, just think about it. Why would Donald Trump, in the middle of a day that has no news coming out, come out and all of a sudden make news and say, I'm going to get rid of NATO, and if NATO doesn't like it, you know, do what they're supposed to, I'm going to tell Putin, do whatever you want. I mean, right. Just think about it. People laugh at him and think that it's, oh, you know, he's crazy. Oh, he just rhetoric. Oh, he just come out. Oh, he's right. No, this is a specific tactic. These are messages that he's giving Vladimir Putin. This is how he can't call him up and talk to him. There's too much, you know, spotlight if anybody tried. So this is a message that to give. Yeah, hey, I'm there. Do whatever you want. Just get me into the seat. And that's why even
I had left with the scrutiny that's been on Trump for so many years now, since he ran and possibly even before, is it almost impossible that there are legitimate back channels now between Putin and Trump, and that they really have no choice other than communicating cryptically publicly?
No, of course they have back channels. I mean, look, he does it right in front of your face. He's getting the old gang back together. Paul Manafort's coming into the mix. Why would Paul Manafort come? I mean, he has direct contacts. We don't have to assume or think. We know directly he was paid by who he was paid and who his close contacts were, directly up to Putin. So, you know, if he comes into Trump's fold, what do you think? There's no connections there. I mean, Paul Manafort could travel. He could do things. I mean, you know, it's a free world. And then there's people that travel, and you know, there's you think just because we caught this Russian agent, there's no more Russian agents, there's no more. I mean, there's right. You have to realize, I mean, there's big campaigns going on, and that's just one example of Trump. You know, why Trump would bring Manafort back is to be able to have that backdoor channel, of communication. And there's others, that are around Trump, you know, especially in the past. I'd say 4 years after, especially after 2020, that have jumped on it because everybody with any common sense that at that point already after January 6th already said that's it and jumped off. But that's when all the, the good jumped off and all the bad jumped on. So everybody that's around them or everybody that would deal with them is somebody that has some kind of a corrupt or bad intention, because nobody with a good intention would want to deal with them because of knowing who Donald Trump is. So you have to understand, it's like saying, like, if you were a good businessman and you had a good business, would you go and borrow money from the mob? No, you'd go to the bank and borrow money. Correct. Right. But if you were a shady guy and had, you know, you were running drugs or you were doing something illegal, you can't go to the bank. You'd go to the mob. So same thing here. So if you're a country or you're doing something, you're shady, or you want to get some sort of influence, you're going to go to Donald Trump. You know what I'm saying? Sure. So that's the world we're in. So you have to realize that. I mean, these are the type of people that are around him. These are the type of people that are going to approach him and are approaching him and dealing with him. So absolutely, we're going to have lots of craziness and influence from all over the world.
Do you get a pardon from Donald Trump unless he needs you?
I don't think you even get a pardon from Donald Trump if he needs you. I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, with Donald Trump, you know, he screams loyalty, loyalty. But again, just like a mob boss, loyalty goes one way. You know what I'm saying? You don't see a mob boss coming out and throwing himself on the sword for his soldiers. Sure. Never. The soldier has to die, go to jail for life, whatever the case, to secure the mob boss for their thing to go on. Same thing here. You never see Donald Trump. I mean, we already have a record of 8 years, and I'm one of these people that, I mean, listen, Donald Trump till this day says he doesn't know me. I mean, maybe it's dementia. Maybe it's like, you know, he's completely lying to the public. But I mean, the whole world understands that me and Donald Trump had a relationship, and he still says he doesn't know me. So this is the type of individual you're dealing with, you know.
How important was Bill Barr in us being able to reach the point where we are now, where the possibility exists that Donald Trump might become president of the United States once again?
Oh, I blame Bill Barr for everything, even though Donald Trump is the main cause of it. But Bill Barr, you know, with his you know, and again, I don't discount, maybe his intentions were good. You know, he could play whatever role, but his actions as the Attorney General of the United States, he basically allowed Trump to run wild and get to where we are today. And when he jumped ship, it was too late. He was already jumping ship because he was trying to save his own ass and not try to save the country.
Right.
He had plenty of opportunities, starting with the Mueller report. They brought him in strictly for the Mueller report to discredit it and throw it out. He did that. Next thing on the plate was Ukraine. He knew that the whistleblower complaint came out. He knew we were, identified as Rudy's guys. He knew we would have to testify in Ukraine, and he knew we would bring the information that was coming from Russia. See, Bill Barr understood that all the stuff we were getting was Russian disinformation. He just couldn't stop it because Trump wouldn't allow him to stop it, and because he would allow Rudy Giuliani and us to run wild. So the only way he thought he could stop this and protect Trump was by arresting me, shutting it up, and covering up all this information and hiding it. And then making me look like, you know, because remember, when I was arrested and what I went to prison for are two different things. Campaign finance, you would have never known who Lev Parnas was if that was my original charge. My original charge was espionage, trying to get rid of, kill the U.S. ambassador with the, you know, unindicted co-conspirator one who was a sitting U.S. congressman. I mean, there was a lot of juice, 6 months on the television nonstop. And at the end of the day, they dropped all of that. They needed that to discredit me. They needed that to hide the truth. They needed that to be able to. And that was all Attorney General Bill Barr. And then when the pressure was still coming on, what did he do? He went ahead and assigned a special prosecutor, Scott Brady, for the simple purpose to vet out all Ukrainian information. So what does Scott Brady do? He doesn't interview me, doesn't look at any of my information. Not only that, but we called Scott Brady because when the DOJ turned a blind eye to us, when me and my lawyer were staying there and they didn't want to hear anything about Trump, Ukraine, or anything that was going on, we then called Scott Brady because that's who the special prosecutor. He didn't return our phone calls. They chose to listen to an informant that they knew, because if the FBI is going to tell you or the CIA is going to tell you that they didn't know and didn't vet the information he was giving him, okay, bullshit, all right? Okay, you know, ignorance is worse than, you know, not doing. So I don't know what's worse. So, you know, let's leave it at that. You know, you're the premier FBI. You basically allowed a sitting U.S. president to get impeached because didn't want to vet the information. So that's bullshit. It was a cover-up. And that's where Bill Barr, the whole complicity comes in. Because if Bill Barr would have stood up and allowed the impeachment to continue, allowed me, instead of trying to cover me up, allowed me to testify instead of making me out to be some kind of criminal and charging me with all this kind of crazy stuff, and allowed that to happen, we would not be here. Donald Trump would have been impeached. We would have all moved on. Everybody would have had careers, and we would have been, again, a united country. Again, not agreeing on policy, but at least united one way against Russia, you know, Vladimir Putin, against, you know, people like Kim Jong-un. But we're not, because of Bill Barr. He allowed that, and then the senators, the Republican congressmen and senators ran with it, and they enabled him, and just like they're enabling him today. Because it's not what Donald Trump said, Jack. That's the whole thing. Because majority of people don't believe the person it's coming from. But when you all of a sudden have Donald Trump saying something, and then you got 4 or 5 U.S. sitting congressmen and women, and another several senators, and then you have people on Fox television all spewing the same propaganda, come on. What normal person that would listen to that, you know, wouldn't say, you know, okay, you know, there has to be some truth in it. I mean, they all can't be lying. I mean, these are all respectable, you know, I mean, this is people that were taught to respect and learn. This is people that make our laws and rules. These are people that control our lives. So you're not going to listen. I mean, they're all lying. So, and that's where the problem comes in.
So how important, then, and I think we know the answer to this, but just so we can elaborate on it, how important have people like Ron Johnson, Lindsey Graham, Pete Sessions, Jim Banks, the list goes on and on, Andy Biggs, how important have they been for the big lie?
They're it. They're the core. Like I said, I mean, without them, Donald Trump doesn't exist.
Okay.
See, go ahead.
What does he have on them other than what we might see in the public? Is there some leverage, so to speak, or a level of fear about things that aren't talked about in the media?
You know, it's, you know, Jack, it's so simple. Sometimes the simplest answer is the truth. And again, I'm going to compare it to the mob. A mob boss needs, it doesn't work with the soldiers. He needs his capos. His capos are the most trusted. And why are they capos? Because they are as corrupt as that same mob boss. They have the same thought, same influence, same idea, same everything. And they agree. And then they deal with the soldiers. So now let's go to Donald Trump. Donald Trump is the mob boss. These people that you mentioned in Congress are his capos. He doesn't need anything. They're as corrupt as Donald Trump. They're using Donald Trump for their own benefit. He's perfect for them.
Critical piece.
Yeah, because without Donald Trump, they don't get. Do you ever see Marjorie Greene as a congresswoman and without Donald Trump being in office? Ever. That's the perfect example. So she needs Donald Trump to be for her. So they feed off each other. It's that corruption. Lindsey Graham, he's a unique beast. I mean, he flip-flops more than I've seen. I've never seen anybody. I mean, here we are now, Donald Trump's throwing him to the wolves because he, you know, about abortion, you know, you know, he came out and went. So Lindsey Graham, I think, is just one of those, like, you know, I think he lost it. He's flipped so many times. I don't think anybody already respects him. I think he should just go off into the sunset. I think Donald Trump destroyed him, but the rest of them are corrupt. I mean, they need Donald Trump. That's what they have going. That's when people ask me, oh, does he have some compromise? He doesn't need compromise. Putin doesn't need compromise on Donald Trump. Why? Because Donald Trump believes in what Putin believes. They have the same thing in motion. Same thing with, you know, the congressman. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think if people take away nothing else from this episode than the point that you've just made, I think that is the golden nugget that will serve them very well. And I've been guilty of this as well, in suggesting that, my God, what does he have on them that they stick with him? And your point is, he doesn't need anything on them. They are as corrupt as he is. They believe the same things that he does. So the people that we're talking about that they might need something on are the low level people, the lowest.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, you might have somebody that said something or did something in the privacy that they know, but it's not like, see, we always right away try to think about, okay, they have pictures. It's like the P tape. Remember that whole P tape? That's when we say they got something. This is what we think about. It's like when people say, oh, Ron Johnson was in Moscow, so they probably have him, videos of him with prostitutes. You know what? Is it possible? Absolutely. But in more realistic, see, that what I'm trying to do is for people to understand the more realistic part of it and not go down rabbit holes. The more realistic part is why people get involved in a conspiracy, why people get involved in a crime, is because they are, first of all, as corrupt as each other, need each other, and use each other. And that's why typically they usually turn on each other. And that's the same thing that's happening with Donald Trump. It's just, you know, his, you know, is such a powerful story and on such a big level, it's going to take a little time, but his result is going to be the same thing. All of these people that you see running around eventually are going to turn on Donald Trump. Eventually, they're going to try to save themselves, because what's going to happen in 2024, and you heard it here first on your show, Jack, is once the Democrats win, once they win the Congress and they win the presidency, we will have real trials. We will have real hearings of responsibility and accountability, like people like these people that are pushing Russian propaganda, like these people that are holding these hearings, sham hearings, like these people like Bill Barr that covered up the truth. And that's when it's all going to come out. Once that starts coming out and prosecutions come out, believe me, they're not going to cover up. We're going to start seeing them rats run off the ship. So yes, right now it seems they're all because they have the power. Because right now, just think about how crazy of a rule we have that if you're a sitting congressman or congresswoman, you're really allowed to lie. You could go out and lie. You're protected by some speech laws that you could, as long as you're on the floor and on TV, you could lie and do. It should be absurd. There has to be accountability for these people that are in office, because this is who we look up to. This is who America's, you know, majority of Americans don't have the time to listen to your podcast or go on Spaces or Twitter. Sure. And out there and get all of this information. Majority of Americans, just like in the world, they work, they do their thing. We have families and they read the headlines. And they'll read a headline, you know, whatever channel they watch and whatever channel's pushing it, that's what they're going to believe. not the truth. It's about, we don't have real news anymore.
No.
I mean, you have to search for it because everything is so opinionated and motivated towards to push one side or the other, and people are jaded. So that's why people like Donald Trump, this is when it's the most dangerous time, is when you got, somebody like Donald Trump that could come in and stir up all of this diversiveness and divisiveness and try, to try to get ahead. But, I think there will be accountability.
How much of what goes on in terms of the directions that Donald Trump is going in at any given time, how much of that is influenced and or determined by Putin? And how much free reign does Donald Trump have?
Well, again, it's not so much as determined by Putin. It's like they have a common understanding. You have to understand that Putin needs Trump and Trump needs Putin. Just like we spoke of Marjorie Greene. Why is she on Trump's bandwagon is because with his support, she could be a congresswoman. She knows tomorrow if Trump is gone, she's going to be gone. She's not going to win. Same thing here. Putin has a very big problem. He started a war in Ukraine that he underestimated, that he thought he was going to take over in a few days. He never thought that NATO and, America is going to stand up and give such help. And he's losing. So the only way Putin could win and save his face, save his country, and try to take over Ukraine is if America stops funding Ukraine. If NATO gets eliminated and NATO starts worrying each country for themselves and starts forming different alliances and not funding Ukraine and start worrying about. If that happens, I mean, it's a matter of time that eventually Russia will take over Ukraine. I mean, you don't need rocket scientists. It's just, factual stuff. They're much bigger, more powerful. They have much more people, ammunition, and, it's just a matter of time. So Putin understands that the only way that could happen is if Trump wins. And Trump has told him that and through even messengers. You have to understand, Viktor Orban is a direct messenger between Trump and Vladimir Putin. You can't get any closer. When people say, are they sending messages? Are you kidding me? Take a look at Viktor Orban, who speaks to Putin on the phone like this. Hey, traveled to Mar-a-Lago, had a private dinner with Trump, and after that flew back.
Right.
Okay. Are you kidding me, guys? You're telling me like there was no messages from Putin to Trump and Trump to Putin? Well, you got one of the messages. Orban couldn't even hold it in where he turned around and said, right after he got out, he said, Trump said as soon as he wins the presidency, he's going to stop all aid to Ukraine. So there you have it, folks. I mean, it's you don't have to look into all this craziness. I mean, it's in black and white. These people need each other. That's why they're supporting and helping each other, because if one of them loses, the other one loses. And that's why these corrupt people they're not friends because they admire each other or, Trump does admire Putin and looks up to him because of it. But Putin looks, thinks Trump is a clown. Right. So it's not like there's a friendship. And that's why it's such a dangerous time right now, because their alliances are forming. But people need to start listening to what Trump is saying and doing and not give. If I may just, I did several interviews on Ukrainian TV. And a lot of, some of the Ukrainian channels are pro-Trump, and I was astonished. Like they were trying to tell me, and I just asked him, I said, like, what and why in the world would you be pro-Trump? Like, he's telling you that if he wins, you're gone. You will not have a country anymore. You will have, and they are so so scared to believe that thought that they start telling me they're like, it can't be that. He's saying that just for for ratings or something like that. But once he wins, he's going to help Ukraine. And I start breaking it down to them and saying, give me one reason why he would do that. Give me one benefit it would serve Trump. Give me one. He has stopped funding to Ukraine right now. This is the second time he did. The first time he did when he sent me there with the message, and then he stopped congressional aid, which he got impeached for the first time. Over 400 million. And this is the second time where, he just in the middle told, because he decided that he doesn't, it's better for Russia and better for him. He's going to stop all aid right now to Ukraine, which they haven't gotten. So he's doing it. And that's what I'm saying to you. Listen to what he's doing. He's not, if anything, when he gets in, if he were ever to get, God forbid, into office, he would only be worse, not better. He has no benefit of being Benner. It's going to be scorched earth, revenge campaign, dictatorship, and trying to turn this country into America first. But, you know, look, what I hate comparing somebody to like Hitler, but what did Hitler try to do? He tried to do a clean, pure German race, the cleanest and the purest. If you take away Germany, put in America at the time, what is Trump and his mega rhetoric saying?
Right.
We need a pure, clean America. We don't need no immigrants. We don't need any, you know, blacks, white, Jews. We need a pure-blooded Christian America, you know? And that's the same, I mean, rhetoric. You know, start calling people vermin. You know, it's all there. Just gotta watch and listen, you know, and, you know, open your eyes and you'll see it. It's not that big, you know,
I think that's a critical point that you just made, Lev. Here's Ukraine being pummeled by Russia, and you found there were Ukrainians in Ukraine who were semi-defending Donald Trump. Do you think part of the magic of that for him is that he tells the truth in such a bombastic, exaggerated manner that people think, well, I can't be serious, while he's telling you the exact truth in the moment? Is that part of
No, that's the crazy part. When he tells the truth, people don't believe him. And when he lies, people believe the lies, because the lies are easier to believe.
Yes.
So when he and these people in Ukraine that are supporting Trump, not that they like Trump, is because they're scared, because they right now feel that the Biden administration might have done more. You know, maybe they could have done more. They could have gotten F-16s quicker. They could have helped, you know, so they have that effect. And then you have Trump coming out and sometimes spewing this rhetoric. Well, if I was president, I'll stop this war in 24 hours. So they take it with the effect like, you know, he's a strong man. We need a strong man to fight a strong man. And, you know, maybe Biden's not the guy to fight Putin. But what they're not realizing, that he's not there to fight Putin. They're the same. They're in the same team. They need each other. You know,
I think most people, and I've been guilty of this myself, I think most people think of, here's Putin, here's Trump, and Putin's this puppet master. But what you're telling me is it's a very synergistic relationship.
Yep.
And that creates a very different working environment than the puppet master.
Puppet master, he has to give him orders. He has to tell him what he needs done. There's none of that going on, because also you have to understand Trump does have that chip on his shoulder where, like, you know, I'm the boss. So they don't have, there's none of that relationship going on where they're telling each other what to do. It's to make it easier for the common folk. It's like, listen, I want to go rob a bank and you want to go rob this bank. I could pick locks. You could pick the safe. We need each other. You know, let's go do it.
Right.
Simple as that. You know, Putin right now needs Ukraine. Trump doesn't give a shit about Ukraine.
Right.
If, you know, Trump needs to win America. You know, Putin wants Trump to win America, because what does it give him? A, it gives him Ukraine, but what it gives him more than anything, it gives him divisiveness between Americans and between the Democrats and Republicans, to a point where we're almost at civil war ourselves. And that only benefits every tyrant out there that's trying to do, because during that type of mayhem is when real problems start happening, because that's when you don't have the unit. Because like I said, we could as Americans disagree on policy. We could disagree on taxes, on gas, but we always agree that it's us against the tyrants, we're the good against the bad. And now you have people talking about, like, why do we need, you know, our military all over the world? Are you kidding me? Just think about what would happen if you decide to take the police off the street.
Right.
What would happen? That's what you want to do. I mean, the reason why you're able to try, the reason why everybody has this free speech, the reason why we're sitting here saying, where you're able to say, get rid of, you know, like, you do whatever you, is because we're the military all over the world. It's because we're out there. That's why countries like Russia, China, you know, Iran, they don't just go out there and take over or do what they want to, because they know there's repercussions and accountability, because the United States is the most powerful nation, the most powerful army in the world, and we're out there on the side of good against evil. So now Trump and his mega guys want to just come in and take that away and say, you know, America first. Let's build a wall around America. You know, let's forget trade with China, trade with the, you know, Eastern Europe. Let's forget that. We have everything we need inside. Let's start making only American cars. You know, I mean, are you kidding me? Let's go back 100 years. Let's go back 100 years and let's live like we did. Let's go back to slavery. Let's go get rid of it. I mean, that's what, if you listen, if you really listen to what they're asking, is they want to go back to the, you know, instead of going forward, they want to go backwards. They want to do away with women's rights. I mean, just think about all of these things. Like, what, I mean, Roe versus Wade. I mean, nobody, if you would have told, we would have spoke about this 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, we would have said never.
Right.
I mean, abortion, we're at a point in our country where the whole world, forget about America, the whole world agrees that abortion, you know, the woman should have the right to, you know, we might disagree, you know, terms, or, but, you know, she should have the right. And here we are now, where we don't, where it's the United States, it doesn't have that, you know, freedom anymore, you know, where you're, depending on the state you live, you might go to jail if you by accident get pregnant. And like in Florida, 6 weeks, I mean, majority of women don't know in 6 weeks. They don't know, you know, it takes sometimes second, third month until they even realize that they're pregnant. And now you have the 6 months. So it's becoming, what happened to the free United States of America? You know, we're starting to, you know, turn into draconian, you know, communistic, you know, dictators ways of living. And that's what, you know, that whole mega movement Trump is all about.
So let's say the unthinkable happens and Donald Trump becomes president again. Here's what I'm really curious about. Right now, there's a synergistic. Trump needs Putin. Putin needs Trump. I think they both know it would be good for neither of them if they ever became real foes, where they no longer needed each other. So at what lengths do you think they would go to, and how might they do that to make sure they continued to need one another?
Well, you have to understand, just listen to both of their rhetoric and understand why they have no reason to be foes. Putin's talking about Russia first. Trump's talking about America first. So, you know, as long as they don't, if Trump tomorrow dismantles NATO, if Trump pulls, you know, all funding to Ukraine, you know, pulls troops out of, you know, strategic Germany or strategic places out there where we, you know, I mean, like, he's giving Russia carte blanche. I mean, what he's going to, I mean, that doesn't have, that's the problem. It doesn't happen during Trump's time. The problem happens 20 years from now. You know, once, you know, Putin is gone, there's some other leadership. Once the Russia is now so powerful that America is not the most powerful, the leader, where America might be the powerful America inside our gates, but now we don't control. Now we, you know, we don't all know the territory. We don't have our people everywhere. Now China, I mean, just think about pulling our troops all over the world. I mean, just think about how China is expanding every day. Forget about Russia. I mean, we talk about Russia, China. You got Iran. You got North Korea that every day is trying to shoot up a missile in the air.
Right.
You know, you have Taiwan sitting there just like, you know, chump meat, you know, looking at any day we might wake up with breaking news, you know. So you got all of these. And then you got the Middle East that's happening. So you got all of this turmoil. You know, if Trump wins, I mean, what's going to happen is what's going to happen is we're going to, the international side of the world, we're not going to see news about that, because we're going to have news 3-4 times changing a day of what's happening in the United States. He's going to go after, you know, dismantling the Constitution. He's going to go after all his enemies. We're going to see trials and people that he's going to go after and getting rid of. So that's going to, what he's going to do in the United States. In the meantime, Putin's going to take over Ukraine. You know, China's going to, you know, maybe attack Taiwan. You know what I'm saying to you?
Sure.
I don't know what happened in the Middle East. You know, you know, Israel is going to end up going to war with Iran and other countries and that's what's going to happen, you know, and it's going to be, and he'll be America first, and, you know, and that's what people don't understand. They think that he's going to stop all these wars because he's going to come in on this golden horse, like that everybody's scared of Donald Trump. That's what he's portraying to all of his followers. This is, if you listen to what they say, it's like, are you kidding me? Donald Trump compared to Putin, compared to Xi, like they make him out to be some kind of superhero, like he has some kind of superhero, when they don't realize that these guys have been doing this their whole life. They've been groomed from childhood. Now Trump has been running around trying to how to get a peek under a woman's skirt illegally, you know what I'm saying, right, to you, and how to cheat on his taxes, and how to, you know, go kick the ball and cheat in golf. Like, I mean, this is what he was groomed for, while these people were groomed, I mean, from childhood to where they are. And they've been in, just think about it, Putin's been there for what, 25 years? I don't know how long she's been there. What, 20 years, 15 years? I don't know how long he's been there. You got, you know, what's his name? Kim Jong-un, another, what, 15, 20, and then his father. I mean, you got people there. And then you got Trump that is nowhere. I mean, the guy's never been outside the United States. This is a guy that's not even been allowed to go. Davos never got an invitation. So, you know what I'm saying to you? It's not like he's some kind of world-renowned, you know. And then you got all these followers, and they look at him. And I say to them, I said, have you ever met Donald Trump? Have you had a conversation with him? Forget about the rhetoric that you hear, and then you pretend that, you know, because he pounds his chest and he stands there strong and the camera looks good and makeup is good and everything is good, and you think that's Superman. I mean, but have you ever sat down with him and really, you know, had a conversation? I mean, the guy had no idea where Ukraine was. I had to explain. He had no idea that they even had oil or gas. Like, he was all astonished when we had our conversation. This is the president of the United States. So, no, you know, I don't want to think about it, Jack, because I don't believe that America is that blind that we would allow two-time impeached, four-time indicted, over 88 counts, federal indictments, a sexual predator to be, you know, represent us. I don't care how much you want your taxes. Forget about you want, how much you think. See, that's the other thing. So this is the other illusion. People think Donald Trump's going to come in there and all of a sudden taxes are going to be lower, eggs are going to be lower, gas, you know, everything's going to be great. How is that going to happen? I don't get it. Donald Trump can't negotiate with his own Republicans, let alone Democrats. So to get anything passed, you would need to have some kind of negotiation going on between the Senate, the Congress, and the office of the presidency. Can anybody tell me that you see Donald Trump being able to negotiate with anybody except for four or five people in Congress that are his loyal mega? I mean, his own Republicans don't agree with him. You got people like Ken Buck jumping ship saying that Marjorie Greene is pushing Russian propaganda. I mean, this is insane.
Right.
They're trying to take out now, again, the majority leader. You know, I mean, this is what's going on. So, I mean, how are you? Can you accept? They had the House of Orders. Tell me one thing they passed in 4 years that they've had at this. Nothing. And what I'm saying to you, not only did they not pass it, but now they got what they wanted. They got the attention on the border wall, on the border crisis. Everybody's agreeing with them that there is a border crisis. We need to do something about it. And then they stop it because, it might help Joe Biden. Now, just think about that. How are any of these people for the people? They're showing you that it's all about them. And, you know, then you get some of these people, loyalists, that are just so hardcore cultists, are like, it doesn't matter. We're willing to suffer. It doesn't matter. Do whatever it takes. We just got to get Joe Biden out of there. I'm like, are you fucking crazy? Excuse me. Are you crazy? Like, what is wrong with you? Like, you know what I'm saying to you? So, yeah, I don't believe that we're that messed up as a country. That, you know, yes, I believe that there's a loud voice in the mega world that Trump has amplified and that the media amplifies by trying not to amplify it. They do worse of a job and amplify it even more. You know, just think about it. Instead of keeping the media cycle, see, Donald Trump plays the media like a fiddle. He feeds them, like, you know, when something important comes out and he wants the media cycle to change, he right away will come out, make a speech or something, and they run like little rabbits and right away do it. If they had any, you know, just a little common sense and say, yeah, don't jump on every story. It's not about that. You learned. It's been 8 years. Stick to the facts. Stick to the major story. Run that story where Donald Trump stole or raped or did. Don't go on all of a sudden now because Donald Trump said, I'm going to get rid of NATO. What does that have to do with it? Like, you know, people, you know, so that's. It's a combination, Jack. You know, everybody needs to do their part, but they have to stop Donald Trump and just like Putin and all of them. They play people like a fiddle. They know the weak spots, and that's what they're good at. They're salesmen.
What's Donald's kryptonite, and how does the Biden campaign most effectively use that in the lead up?
Absolutely. And I tell him, and that's what I've been walking around talking to all the people behind the scenes, is unify your message. Do unto Donald as he does unto you. If you take a look at Donald, when he wants a message out there, he will pound it in your brain until everybody agrees, until even the Democrats, the news media will start saying, okay, we'll give it to you, but let's move on, because they just want to move on.
Right.
Do the same thing. He's given you enough. This election is not about policy. This election is not about which president is better. This election is about saving our democracy. This election is about not allowing a dictator to get into office. This election is about, you know, so what the Democrats and everybody need to do is unite, not be against each other with 100 different messages, but unite just like they are and get that powerful voice out. And Donald Trump's given us enough, his own ammunition, the truth. Like, for instance, this trial, I can't wait to see how the media starts covering it and everything. Because you know what? It's like, I'll give you an example. You get a guy like Tony Babulinski, right? He walks on Fox News. Before he gets on Fox News, they'll spend 5-10 minutes talking about him. Like, he's the most honest, the most noteworthy. Like, the guy is God himself. Now you take the flip side. You get a guy like me or Michael Cohen going on CNN or MSNBC. Before we go on, there's a 5-minute tirade talking about how we're criminals, how we're liars, how we, you know, we have to be careful about how we listen to us, how they go through that. And then they go into, okay, now tell us what you want. Are you kidding me? Like, do you understand what I'm saying to you? Are you kidding me? Like, how do you not sit there and say, you know, maybe spend 30 seconds if you want to protect yourself for getting someone out there, and then say, yeah, but these guys are heroes. They stood up in front of Congress. They did this. They did that. And they're getting the truth out. And here's the facts. Like, build this also up. It's not about me, but I'm just saying to you, they do it to Mike or anybody else that, you know, has come out of Trump's cult and is now talking the truth, or that had been punished for their deeds, but now has paid their debt to society and is out there telling the truth. So that's a big difference. You know what I'm saying to you? Those are the little things. It's all about getting the message. Sitting there and trying to go and talk about policies and talk about how the eggs are going to get cheaper, Biden's going to lose. You know what I'm saying to you? Because people, you know, think when you talk about there's a problem, they want to change. And if there's problem, if you're going to admit that there's a problem, you're not going to be the one that's fixing it.
Right.
They're going to want to change because you couldn't do it. If you couldn't do it in 4 years, so you need to get off that. Because, like, I'll give you an example. We had the greatest job economy numbers since ever. And we didn't get, you didn't see the media go crazy about people. Like, instead, you saw when people were like, is it too good to be true? The media is talking about, like, but we don't feel it as people. So look at the message. So they're basically telling Trump's message, saying, like, whatever, the Biden administration numbers, they're bullshit because, you know, your eggs are still high, your gas is still high. So that's why they need to get off of that. This is not one of those old school elections.
When I hear people say, okay, so here's the chart. The economy is supposedly good, but I don't feel that it's good. And I immediately think the reason you don't feel that it's good is because the media keeps telling you that it's not that good. If there was a message of consistency,
And not only that, Jack, but what the media doesn't tell the people is that, yes, the numbers came out today, but we're not going to feel that for maybe 2 years.
Right.
we don't feel the reason why we're feeling all of this problems is not because of Biden. It's because of Trump. Biden and his administration did, we're going to start feeling the effects of that next year. You know, it takes time for all of these policies, all of these things to go in effect. So people think just because there's an announcement, see, the media should do a better job. Say, yes, this means that for the next 2 years, you'll see this trend go up, instead of saying, wow, they came up and, you know, the eggs are still high. Well, of course, how did you know, and the normal person doesn't relate that because it's not explained, and it's the media's job to, and that's where I think we have a lot of fault in the message. It's like the message is not proper enough, you know, when it comes to the other side, because they don't play by their rules. Because they're willing to cheat, lie, steal, do whatever it takes to get the message across. That's why they might have 20 million people, but they sound like they have 300 million people.
Yes.
You understand what I'm saying to you? They have a minority, but they have a majority voice because they stick to the message. And that's why if you see any one of the mega Trumpers, they put up a GoFundMe, they'll raise $100,000 just if they say my pinky hurts.
Yes.
My pinky hurts, and you know they'll jump in. One of us on the right side. When I say right, I don't mean Democrat. I mean anti-Trump. Sure. Goes on and says, you know what? I need to raise $50,000 to be able to go get the truth out to fight Trump and everything.
Right.
we'll get insulted. We get told that we're grifters. Like, go back to Trump world. Like, you know what I'm saying? And we'll collect $3,000-$4,000 if we're lucky. You know what I'm saying? So this is your whole, how do you fight when, you know, we don't have the same unity? And it's understandable because we're not under a cult. We're not under a brainwash mentality. So yes, we have opinions. It's like we could be Democrats, but we might not agree on everything. Like, you know, we have a normal party. That's why there's a far left, you know, a middle, and, you know, same thing with the right. But when it comes to the right, they're so brainwashed and they have the blinders on to such a degree where they don't have that, like, one way or the other. If you're not on our side, you're a rhino, you're dead, you're not, that's it. You're not, we don't, you know, so you're either with us or you're without us. And right. When you're with us, the message is strong and forward. And that's why it's, you know, important, like, you know, for your question, Jack, I think unite the message, you know what I'm saying? And the message should be is, listen, I, you know, if I was Joe Biden, you know what I would do? I would come out there and say, listen, don't vote for me, but vote against Donald Trump. I mean, it's not about you might not like me, this election is not about me. It's about not getting Donald Trump into office. And that's the vote you want to get, the vote anti, you know, you want to get people that just won't vote because, you know, they'll say, you know what, I won't vote for Biden, but I, you know what, I'm not going to vote for Trump. Or people that will come out and vote. And if you have that, because all you need is a small percent. Trump to win, just think about it, he needs all his GOP base, 100% of it to support him, which he doesn't have now. We saw the cracks between Ron DeSantis and Nikki Haley campaigns. I mean, Nikki Haley's still getting, what, 13, 15%, and she's not even on the ballot anymore. So just think about it. So there, we understand that there is a crack that he doesn't have 100% of the GOP. We know he doesn't have 100% of the liberals or the independent vote. So you know what? I don't see his path of winning without election interference by the Russians, without some sort of, you know, shenanigans, court, you know, in some of these Republican states where they're getting geared and ready for it. Trust me when I tell you. And, you know, I think if in a true election, I don't think he has a chance.
Right.
But with all of this stuff, you know, and what scares me the most is AI, with this AI technology. Yes. That now they're able to, because once you see something in your brain, it's a lot easier to implant into the brain than to take it out. So yes. Once you see a picture or a video of something, and then even if they put it on TV and say, oh, that was a fake, still, you know, that picture, you know what I'm talking about. You can't see it. You know, it takes a long time. So, you know, that AI technology, you know, all of a sudden we're going to start seeing, and I think, you know, Russia will use that big time. And I think also that we're going to see heavy attacks onto Ukraine come summertime. These are all going to be things to turn, you know, the world into chaos. We'll see terrorist attack. I think there'll be a lot of chaos to try to show that, because I think the only platform Trump has to run on is being the strong man that's going to come in there and save the world, save our country, even though it's nonsense. It's never, but it's like, you know, when you're doing a marketing campaign, a sales pitch, that's the marketing campaign they're running around Trump, where Joe Biden's the weak guy. We have all of these problems in the world. And Trump, you know, just remember, there was no war around Trump. Well, Trump comes in, they're all scared of me. You know, we write love letters. You know, when I come in there, 24 hours, the war ends in there. 24 hours, you know, Palestine is gone completely. You know what I'm saying to you? Right. 24 hours. I mean, it's just his, you know, and agree or disagree, but it's all scorched earth. So you might agree. And that's why I've also been watching a lot of these mega Republicans that have been turning on him in different ways because of his policies, like in Israel and Palestine, and then his policies in Ukraine and Russia compared to, and you're starting to see a lot of cracks where, you know, and now he came out with the abortion, saying that now he finally took credit, saying that he got rid of Roe versus Wade. And I think that's going to be a huge thing, especially in Florida. I think Florida is now up for grabs after DeSantis, what he did, and now with the abortion on the ballot. I think he's going to just bring out a huge, huge, you know, impact, you know, vote. So
do you think we'll continue to see more big donors pull away?
I think so. I think as we get close, see, because right now you got to understand, this is nothing yet. We're all of this news we're hearing, you're going to forget all about this even exists because right. The news cycle is going to change. You got to start summertime. Summertime where it's going to start heating up towards closer like September, August, September, October is going to be really right before November, those 3 months. And that's when you should start paying attention more and more because that's when you'll see both campaigns and you'll see where they're heading and what's going on. But I think the Biden campaign has so much ammunition. I think they have so much ammunition. What have they done? Just think about that. I mean, they've passed no. I mean, we barely keep the funding our government to stay. We don't have a shutdown. I mean, that's the number one thing we've been able to do in the past 4 years. I mean, it's just nonsense. And you know, another 4 years of that, then I want to see where our economy is. See, people don't understand that. You know, we're going to feel these 4 years of effects that we're not, you know, getting things done and it's happening that we're arguing, you know, it's just we don't feel them immediately. And that's what people need to realize. So, Jack, you know, I'm going to do a lot of praying. And one of the things I'm doing is besides praying is I'm out there. You know, I have a lot of things planned. I have a documentary coming out sometime in the summertime that's going to really blow the lid off of a lot of things that was going on in Trump world. I have a lot of things that I'm working with a lot of organizations where I'm going to be around the country speaking, you know, speaking truth to all of these and, you know, confronting, you know, just like I did in Congress. I'm going to continue confronting them. I'm not done. I still want to, you know, get answers from all of these, you know, especially, you know, you get Captain Venmo over there, Matt Gaetz coming in trying to, you know, say that I'm a criminal while he has a guy that doing 15 years testifying from prison as a star witness, you know, right. Putting out videos. And then you got guys up there like James Comer that, you know, and that's the crazy part. They have the truth. They know the truth. And there's this new thing that came out today, and I want to make sure your listeners and your viewers pay attention to this because that's going to be the new one unless we headed it off. So Putin and Russian media came out today that they blame Ukraine for the terrorist attack in Corcus City. But the interesting part, which they added to it, is they added that it was funded by Burisma. Remember that name Burisma, Jack? Where did that name Burisma come from? So basically, they announced that Ukraine was involved in funding the terrorists in the terrorist attack of Moscow. And the big announcement today was that the money came from a little company, oil company in Ukraine called Burisma. Does that company ring a bell a little bit?
It does.
That's the company that has been involved in the whole, you know, that Hunter Biden worked for and Joe Biden. But the interesting part, what they don't say is, yes, the company is registered in Ukraine. But the owner of the company and all of the controlling people live in Russia. That's Mikhail Zlochevsky. He's a pro-Russian. He left Ukraine in 2014 and ran away. So they don't tell you that. But the reason they bring Burisma is because they know what are the hot talking points in America to give these congressmen and Russian propagandists to start spinning now. So now the news, you will see that all of a sudden Burisma is somehow linked to Joe and Hunter Biden to Ukraine to attack Russia for Joe wanting to keep pushing this war. You'll see it. Some people start already retweeting it. I'm just curious to see which congressman or congresswoman is going to be the first one to start pushing that propaganda, you know, with Burisma. But, you know, in the real world, if it was Burisma, I just want your viewers to know, there would be people arrested all over the place in Burisma because all the right. They wouldn't come out and say this is who did it, but and nobody. This is Russia. This is not. I mean,
to your point, then the only reason this is going to be useful to Republicans is they know that the average viewer listener, all it's going to take is for them to just hear the word Burisma. And they've correct. Already created the connections that
Russia. It's you got the key talking points: Russia, Ukraine, Burisma, Joe Biden, Hunter Biden. You know right away if you start Googling or see as you start saying automatically all of those points start coming up. Yes. They know how to do that. So now they put it out there, and what they're doing is by putting out these official videos from official Russian people saying it in authority these statements. Now they're allowing congressmen and media outlets in the West, in the United States, and on social media to repost and start pushing it. So now when the regular person takes a look and says, oh, my God, like, you know, that's Russian television. That's their head, you know, minister of what's it called, saying what's it called. And now our congressmen are saying, so I'm sure our congresspeople have vetted the information and they know something we don't know. Right. So if they're saying it, there you go. And that's how, and it wouldn't surprise me that in the next week or two, you know, this will be brought up in the House Oversight Committee by James Comer somehow saying right. that Joe Biden is involved in, you know, funding Ukrainian terrorists to attack Russia. So, I mean, this is exactly
like a perfect Comer example. Relies completely upon the lack of follow up by the listeners about what he puts out. The fact that they have no foundation for what he's telling them. And like you said, they trust that, hey, here's this guy, this congressman, he's surely that it checked out what he's telling us. And so it must be true.
Yeah. And the whole thing is they don't Comer them. They know the truth. They know this is Russian information. They know because they had all of it. I mean, these are people that sit there and have all this information from mine to everybody. So they know their objective is not to get to the truth. Remember how this all started. Donald Trump did not want an investigation. See, people make mistake. They think Donald Trump wanted an investigation into Joe Biden. No, Donald Trump wanted to announce an investigation. And then he told Zelensky, leave the rest up to me. Because Donald Trump doesn't trust, Rudy Giuliani don't trust Ukrainian officials to do a true investigation. They think they're all crooks. All they need was an announcement to bring it back here so then they could push the conspiracy theory. And same thing here. They don't need, Comer is not looking to get to the bottom of Joe Biden. He knows. Listen, when you have bank records, it's black and white. Either there's a transfer there or there's not a transfer there. You know, running around saying we got 10,000 bank records and we got all this money going over, but show me just one. I don't need 10,000. Show me one line over there that says that money came from Ukraine or Russia into Joe Biden's account. That's it. You got him.
Yes.
Why, what, where, you know, but you don't have it. So that's why you keep running around saying, I got all these records. Yes, you have. Just like they did with me. They would run around and say, oh, he got caught with 10 cell phones and all of these. Well, what they didn't tell you is that six of them didn't work. They were like 10 years old that they took from my house. The other three was my kids. The other one was my wife's. And yes, I had two cell phones. But that's not how they tell you. They pay that. He had 10. So the average person is looking, oh, my God, what would he be doing with 10 cell phones? He has to be a criminal. Same thing here. They put out the news. It's just like, just think about it. When I was sitting there in front of them, they had 8 hours of opportunity to grill me and use me and try to embarrass the Democrats by proving that I'm a liar. Think about it, a liar in anything. They could have tried to prove that I was a liar, not only on the Hunter Biden stuff. They could have been creative because I wrote a book a month before that that they have. They could have read the book and tried to impeach my memory on what I wrote in there that I did in 1989. If they were smart, because even though it wouldn't have been relevant, but at least for the normal person, they would have at least said, oh, okay, well, if you could lie about that, you could lie. If you don't remember about that. But they couldn't do even that because they knew that the facts were so strong
that
they knew that they would be come against them, that they didn't even want to open up. They just wanted to ignore, deflect, and move on, because that's the strategy that Donald Trump has used with me from the same, because I was so when you say kryptonite, I'm Donald Trump's kryptonite. That's why I'm the only person that Donald Trump has never responded to in a tweet, never responded to an end. The only response that his team ever tells any newspaper journalist is no comment. Show me one response from Donald Trump against Lev Parnas. Even when I came out in Congress and called him a liar, called all of them. Did he, even on Truth Social, show me a tweet, show me a response? Yeah, you had the Matt Gaetzes, the Rudy Giuliani's running around, his minion. But Donald Trump, not to respond ever in 4 years since my arrest, after everything I came out. Donald Trump responds to a 16-year-old girl or 85-year-old woman. But he doesn't respond to me, Jack.
That's an interesting point. Until just now, I hadn't ever factored that in, and you are correct. Mm-hmm. I've not seen it. I've not heard it.
Never. And people don't realize it.
And what you're saying is we probably won't.
Oh, no. I would love to. I mean, I call out Donald Trump every day. They're scared to. When I show up on a Twitter space, they go off Twitter spaces. Like, I'm trying to show the people that there's a reason they won't face me. There's a reason why they won't talk to me. There's a reason why they won't give me the light of day, is because I'm coming with the facts. I was one of them, guys. I was one of them. I was the top nonchalant Trumper. You know, I believe drank the Kool-Aid. I thought Trump was nobody better, wanted him in there, and was willing to do anything for him. So that's why, you know, when people out there and sit and try to insult me and say, you know, well, you know, why should we believe you? Or you know what? If you don't listen to guys like me, you will never know the truth. You will never know, because, you know, how is a regular person going to get inside, you know, a mafia boss's hangout or Donald Trump's White House? How? So how are you going to know? Like, you know, if I don't write the book, you're not going to know the story. If Michael Cohen doesn't write the book, yeah, we might have done something wrong. And, you know, but that's why we live in the world and in the country where, you know, you could change and you could do better. And that's what we hope to, because it's people like us that once we realize is then when we can make a change and when it's really relevant. This is not the time to not listen to us. This is not the time to, you know, if you don't like that, you know, I did something wrong 20 years ago and I went and I paid the price for it. God bless you. I'm not trying to, but don't discourage, don't listen to my facts or truth. Don't listen to, I mean, look at the tweets, the text messages, the emails. That will validate everything that, you know, we're saying. So, I mean, and that's where, you know, sometimes the message gets lost. And that's, and if you take a look at it, the only thing, and I challenge and I welcome anybody to go Google, look up, I've never, in 4 years since the day of my arrest, I've done thousands of interviews from every top world agency, from the Times, the Post, CNN, MSNBC, everyone. There's never been an article, I mean, maybe in some very far right wing, you know, that I don't know about, right, that's come out with actual facts to actually contradict anything that I've ever said when it pertained to Ukraine, Donald Trump, Rudy Giuliani, or any of the cohorts that were involved. None of them. The only response ever is that I'm a liar, but never what I'm lying about.
Right.
Never confronting me on the lie that I supposedly I'm lying about, never debunking it, showing facts, or, you know, proving, bringing a witness, you know, or whatever. Only that you're a liar and that's it, you're convicted. But the crazy part is everybody around them is a convicted liar. But that's okay. But because you know you're a convicted liar, that's not okay. We're going to listen to our convicted liar, not your convicted liar. Why don't you not listen to either one? Just look at the facts. Look at the facts.
Right. Is there the possibility that we will one day, and one day could mean a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, that we could one day see testimony from Lev Parnas that we had no idea was going to be taking place?
I surely hope so. I truly believe so. This is not the end of my story. I think this is just the beginning. You know, it was just the end of a chapter, a bad chapter in my life. And now it's, you know, the next chapter in my life. I hope it's going to be a lot more better and productive. And I have a lot of things that I'm planning. And I think that, you know, that there's a lot of the story that still needs to be told. And I really hope that one day, you know, that people like me, people like others that are waiting out there to tell the truth, that will be given the opportunity. And this is the most important thing, under oath, to be able to do it under oath, not on television, yes, not on, you know, go on these, you know, podcasts that they, you know, go out there and lie, but on under oath, where we're all standing there raising our hand under oath, Rudy Giuliani, myself, Donald Trump, Devin Nunes, you know, Ron Johnson, Victoria Tunzing, Sean Hannity. I mean, I could go on and on, you know, Pete Sessions. You know, and when we're all standing there and everybody, you know, has to, you know, pay the piper and, you know, have accountability and say, what was their role? You know, what was your role in this whole thing? What made you believe that Russia was like, show me the evidence, like, you know, follow the money. I tell everybody, follow the money. You know, take a look at all this money coming in the super PACs. I mean, the way these super PACs are set up and the way the money gets funneled offshore, I mean, just follow the money and then take a look at, you know, who's saying, you know, spewing all of these Russian propaganda, and take a look at where this money's coming from. I mean,
and are those PACs set up in such a way, so encumbersome, that with the time frame given in the run up to an election, that it's almost impossible to determine if things are above board before the elections.
See, this is the problem. See, a lot of these places are self-regulated. So like these super PACs are supposed to have compliance offices that, so it's very difficult to catch them during it. And you can't, unless you have some kind of whistleblower and breaks it up. You could only usually catch them after the fact, because that's when they start auditing and taking a look at how things happen, or somebody complains or something. But they're so corrupt, these super PACs, and trust me, I've been a part of them, and I've seen that they close their eyes and do what they need to do. I mean, even my own arrest, I mean, I had no idea. I had no experience of how to send money to donations. We were working with Trump's super PAC. They told us to wire the money there. We wired the money, and that's one of my charges, that we didn't wire it to the right place. It was considered that we were trying to hide, you know, our identity, even though it was all out there. I mean, it's just crazy. I won't go into it now, but the super PAC didn't get in trouble. They weren't supposed to take the money. If the money's coming from, they have a compliance, it's supposed to be a red flag. Don't take the money, send it back. But in our case, they want to take the money. They closed their eyes, took the money, and they don't even get indicted.
Wow.
We paid the money. You know, we go to jail for donating money. It wasn't like we never had a charge of you donated money because you wanted him to do something for you. Like, it wasn't like, it was like, campaign finance law violation. That means you checked the wrong box.
Right.
So you checked the wrong box. People don't go to jail in America for checking the wrong box when they donate money, unless there's some criminal activity behind it. But they needed to get that, because otherwise everything else they had fell apart. You know, because when they realized that I was not a Russian asset and I was working for Trump and part of his mega cult and not Vladimir Putin.
When you were arrested at Dulles Airport, is that something that you were expecting, given what was going on and how you knew Trump and Barr operated?
Oh, no. Absolutely. The crazy part is when I got arrested, at first, as crazy as it seems, I thought it was because I had my vape pen, because while getting on the plane, I was vaping cannabis while I was getting on. And then when the agents jumped out and, you know, arrested us, it's crazy. For that second, I thought to myself, holy shit, this is going to be embarrassing. I just got arrested for smoking weed while going to pick up, you know, all of this, you know, stuff from Vienna.
Right.
But I mean, within 30 seconds, I realized this had nothing to do with the vape pen, when they basically took the vape pen out of my mouth, out of my hand, and put it in my, well, what's it called, and put the handcuffs on and told me, you know. And I said, I saw, like, I mean, they literally shut down the airport. They shut down Dulles Airport while they transformed us across to the holding facility. No planes were taking off, and there was, like, I'd say at least 50 cars. So I knew this was not about, I didn't know what it was about. I had no idea, but, you know, I thought it had something to do with the Democrats trying to attack me for Trump at that time. And, you know, I was cocky and laughing at them, saying, you know, wait till Giuliani, Trump find out, you know, I'll be out of here in a day or two. And, you know, obviously we're here that never happened. And thank God, because, you know, obviously, you know, my story would have been a lot different, because when you're in that cult mentality, it's like you're on drugs. You know, you don't have control of your mind the same way you could sit here today and say, you know, well, I wouldn't have done that, because, you know, your mind works differently under those circumstances, because your mind doesn't have that opportunity or chance to understand other things to compare it to, because you're in such a, you know, echo chamber and isolated, you know, information that comes in, that you know your mind is so powerful that it starts to work negative. You know, it starts promoting that your thoughts and making you believe that you're right. And that's that narcissism that starts building, and it turns into the opposite. Instead of allowing your mind to be free and learn all of this information and then being able to make a common sense, like, you know, what made us difference before is, yeah, we used to love CNN or Fox, but we watched everything. We would like to watch Fox a little bit if we were CNN watchers, to see what they were saying, compare it, because that's how the mind works. Because if you're only listening what you want to hear, you can't. But now you don't have that. Now you have sides that listen only one side or the other, and we're transforming into that us against them mentality. And, you know, it's no good. No good.
We'll kind of wrap up with last couple of questions here. Have you been threatened?
Oh, I've had lots of, you know, I get lots of threats and insults, you know, but one serious event happened where, you know, they actually texted me my home address, and my wife and kids were threatened, and I had to get the authorities involved. But since then, it's quieted down, and, you know, just primarily a lot of social media, you know, attacks.
Right. What would you say to the potential juror, witness, judge, prosecutor, who either is already receiving veiled threats from Donald Trump, or who might be? If you had any advice for them, given your knowledge of Donald Trump, your firsthand knowledge of having worked in his circle, what would you say to them that might give them solace?
The one thing I will tell you is do not back down to him, because backing down will only make it worse. He will not stop. He will attack even worse and make worse. The only way you stop Donald Trump is you stand up to Donald Trump. You stand strong, stay with the facts, stay with the truth, and use your authority. I mean, judges need to start using your authority, because if this was anybody else but Donald Trump doing the stuff he was doing, he wouldn't get away with it. And they need to start using their authority. That's the only way you're going to stop him, because Donald Trump is a coward. You slap him one time really hard. I'm not talking about $10,000 fine a day. I'm talking about putting him in jail for 24 hours.
Right.
At least threaten him with it. Yes. Give him a real threat. Tell him, if this happens one more time, I'm going to lock you up for 12 hours. Forget about 20. Start doing that. You watch how Donald Trump starts, you know, acting differently. Yes, he won't stop. He'll work on different ways. But I promise you, it will change drastically. Donald Trump is a coward. He's no martyr. People say that, oh, Donald Trump's no martyr. He's the guy that, you know, will throw an 80-year-old woman in front of him or a child to save his own life, and his explanation will be because he needs to lead everybody else. You know, right. That dictatorship. You know, everybody needs to die on my behalf because I need to stay alive, because I'm the important one that could keep everybody going, save everybody, protect everybody. And that's the mentality.
Right.
And that's why, you know, he looks at all these people that are going to jail or end up getting in trouble or anything, you know, as more, you know, that's your job, you know, to keep me going. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, as a former street guy, I think you'll know what I'm talking about. Donald Trump strikes me, and you know this better than anybody, somebody that as a kid, as a young man, as a teenager, he's never been punched in the nose.
Oh, no. Yeah,
He's never had to try and recover from a full shot. And right. Of course, now I'm speaking about that more metaphorically, you know, as president and as a businessman. But he's never taken that shot like he needs to.
No, you're 100% right. He, even like in business, like, yes, he would get in trouble, but he would always get out of it. So he would never get punched in the nose where he felt the pain. I understand what you're saying. As a kid growing up, that's a difference. You know, a lot of kids, you know, talk about being, you know, walk tough. But unless you got punched in the nose and you know what it feels like.
Absolutely.
It's totally different, you know. And right. Yes, you know, and I've been punched in the nose plenty of times. So I can tell you, I know. Exactly. I know how it feels like. And I can tell you Donald Trump is not a guy that has had any street fights or any type of altercations. He's a guy that would squeeze a lot of it and maneuver. And it's not that I'm, you know, promoting street fights or, you know, anger. But what I'm saying to you is Donald Trump has never really felt accountability. That's maybe the right way to put it. Even from childhood, even through all of that, he's got, Donald Trump has never, he's been the guy, like, you know, I'll give you an example. I have like 7 kids. So one of my sons, the 5-year-old, he's just one that no matter even that, like, we'll punish him. And then all of a sudden he has to get out of his punishment because the whole family's going on vacation and we can't suffer because of him. Or we're going to the movie. So like he's like just lucky to a point where, you know, he doesn't get the accountability that the other kids get for the same punishment. And Donald Trump was that type of a, where he would always slide through it, through bankruptcy, through lawyers, through money, shadiness, this and that. And he never felt the accountability. And now he's feeling it a little bit. And believe me, Donald Trump is feeling it. I mean, his ass is on fire. He understands that he's fighting for his life, no matter what kind of front he comes up. But, you know, the reason why I think he's going to these levels is because you hit it on the spot. He's never felt accountability. And when you don't know what to expect. So he thinks he's still going to get away with it. He still thinks that he's not going to go to prison. They're never going to do this. They're never going to do this. This is gonna... So in his sick mind, he can't do the right thing because he can't understand the consequences. Right. That's how sick it is. You know, people, you know, as sick as it is, we, you know, are scared of consequences. You know, that's why we don't break the law, you know, as honest as we are. But we all have that, like, you know, like even jaywalking, like, oh, let me get there quicker. But, you know, if I know I'm going to get a ticket for $50, I'm going to go and walk the right way. So Trump doesn't have that fear of accountability. And that's why you see in a lot of billionaires, oligarchs, rich people, because they're used to celebrities. You see that tendency of they get away with what, and you know, with stuff that normal people don't get away with, from saying things to doing sexual things to doing financial things to doing political things, until they hit that brick wall and they face accountability. And then usually we all go back and say, why haven't that happened earlier in their lives? And then they all hit it. You know, because it's just a matter of time. And I think Trump's going to hit it after 2024 elections. I think I think the world's going to come out and really show him that, you know, it's going to be, as much as, you know, people like Joe Biden or don't like, it's going to be anti-Trump. It's going to be a huge vote. It's not going to be, so this way, even it won't even be close.
I agree.
I think right after that, I think, you know, he's going to have some major legal problems. I think once he loses 2024, a lot of all his unindicted conspirators, co-conspirators that are hoping to get pardons and are in his bandwagon are going to realize that the pardon is bye-bye, that he's not going to be able to help him, and they're going to start saving their own skin, and it's going to be a free-for-all. I mean, it's not going to be any different than any other mafia story or any, I mean, it's just a matter of time. Unfortunately, we want action today. We want, but unfortunately, you know, it takes time, you know, and Trump is waiting, you know, that's his last hurrah, this election.
That's, I always think of John Gotti. If you
Google exactly. Gotti, yeah, exactly.
And in the end, he was a guy in a white t-shirt in a cell.
That got punched in the face.
Yes.
In the yard.
Yes.
Just like that. And that's going to happen to Trump.
Yes.
That's when he's going to get his first, you know, when somebody's going to, a regular guy in the yard is going to, you know, when, because I think things are going to change. I don't think he's going to get to, you know, people say, how can you go to prison and have presidential, you know, Secret Service? Well, I think if you get convicted of, you know, such severe crimes like he's charged with, I think you should lose. You know, I think there will be, I think things will change in the Constitution, not the way Trump wants it, but I think, you know, I think they will change that. If you are indicted, a convicted criminal that tried to insurrect the United States, that you do not get to have a pension, presidential pension. You lose all these things, you know.
I believe that should be the case, yes.
And I think it will be. I mean, it just when normal people get back into power, into office, and, you know, and Trump is not going to be somebody of a threat to them anymore, or he's just more of a nuisance.
Right.
Believe me, everybody will destroy him.
Yes.
His own people will destroy him. That's what I'm saying. There's look what happened to every single dictator out there, Hitler, all of them. At the end, they're by themselves, Saddam Hussein, all of them, you know, their own people, their own family, everybody turns on them, everybody runs from them because, you know, they're no good.
That's a great point. Look at how many people fled to Argentina, for example, after Hitler's demise.
Yeah.
And had to live out the rest of their lives in secrecy.
Yeah. And still do to this day. I mean, from different countries, from Venezuela, the people that were associated with Maduro, that, you know, how many people all over the world that, you know, are scared, you know, it's all over. Putin, same thing. And, you know, you got the same thing with Chinese, Chinese. And so, yeah, I mean, Trump is, I mean, that's going to be his final story. That's what I believe. I believe that, you know, this is why it's so important. Do I believe it's going to happen overnight? No, it's still going to take several years. I mean, you know, they're not going to give up that easy. The mega base is going to scream that it was stolen. We might have riots. There might be, you know, and things, you know, it's going to take a while. You know, but the only way we could get through it, that's what, like, my answer to the judges and the witnesses and the Lord and everybody out there, stay strong. Because this is where the real war. You know, this is where the real war, right now we're on the front line of the real war. If we win now, we won't have to have our kids ever pick up arms and go fight. But if we lose now, the war will escalate, and eventually we will have bloodshed and kids fighting somewhere in the world, you know, defending something or against something because of tyrants running this the world.
I think you have said that as well as anyone I have heard summarized this. We are on the front lines of the war right now, and if we win, we won't have to.
We won't have to encounter exactly.
That's exactly. What a great place to end, Lev. I hope down the road, sometime in the future, we can do this again because.
Oh, absolutely, Jack. No, we definitely.
I think
we
it's so important these casual conversations where things that people need to know kind of bubble up, and they hear things that maybe they haven't heard on the traditional interviews. And information is so important right now. The truth.
Oh, absolutely.
So yeah, we'll get together again. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your beautiful day, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Jack. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Lev. All I can say is, didn't I tell you? I mean, if you didn't gain something new from this episode of the Jack Hopkins Show podcast with guest Lev Parnas, I don't know what to tell you, because there were things that Lev told me in this episode that I hadn't heard him say to anyone before. I hadn't read it. I hadn't heard news anchors talking about it. He gave some really direct answers and cleared some things up in a very unambiguous way that leaves no room for doubt, at least in my mind. And I'm guessing, at least on some of the answers, that was the case for you as well. I have to tell you one more time, please go out and get or jump online, Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, and order Lev's book, Shadow Diplomacy, Lev Parnas and His Wild Ride from Brooklyn to Trump's Inner Circle. It's the perfect match for this episode that you just watched or listened to. Don't forget to check out my newsletter, which is jackhopkinsnow.com. jackhopkinsnow.com is where I post articles and do videos several times a week that are focused on the mental and the emotional aspect of dealing what's going on in our country and our world right now, and keeping everything in tune and functioning well so that you don't let the daily grind of all of the information that comes out, some of it scary, get you down. Again, that's jackhopkinsnow.com. I'd like to thank you for tuning into this episode of the Jack Hopkins Show podcast, just as I thank you for tuning in to all of the others prior to this one. And I hope you will look forward to tuning in to the next one as well. This is Jack Hopkins, signing off.